You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. There is a classroom at Boston University where students are doing something no one there has done before. This week, they are presenting their work to become the first Masters of Fine Arts graduates in visual narrative. Graphic artist and author Joel Christian Gill founded the program 2 years ago, and he has been visiting with us here on the show ever since, teaching us, just as he has been teaching them, how powerful visual arts are to telling stories that not only thrill us, but stories that we want, that we need, and that we can't afford to forget. Joel is here now with two of those students who will be the first, and we're going to talk about their work. Joel, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Tiziana.
Camila Kerwin, welcome.
Thank you.
And La Flèche Giasson, welcome to you too.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have all three of you. Now, the two of you, I'm going to talk to you about you like you're not in the room for just a second here. I'm going to turn to Joel. Why these two?
Well, all of my students are dope. These two are also dope, but they are also very, very good at talking about their work. Specifically, if anyone was able to hear what they talked about on Wednesday when they did their presentations, there was not a dry eye in the house. They were just very powerful speakers, and they're both very articulate about how they talk about their work.
So I want to jump right in then. And of course, I've seen your thesis presentations. I've seen the art. I know what the stories are about. But let's do this briefly for the listeners. Camila Kerwin, What are you writing and drawing about?
So I'm working on a nonfiction graphic novel that profiles five kids who have died from different forms of gun violence in the U.S.
Okay. And one of the things that struck me in looking at that, I just moderated a virtual panel on gun violence earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that struck me about that is that you were careful to pull out the various ways we have seen young people suffering from gun violence in America over the last couple of decades. It's not just one type of story.
That's right. So the book will trace different forms of gun violence, the kinds that get a lot of national media attention, like mass shootings, but also the sorts that get very little attention, like unsecured handguns tucked away under a parent's bed.
And what brought you to that? Of all the things in the world you could have chosen, and I imagine at some point it must have been hard to pick, Camila?
Yeah. So to be honest, it was about 5 years ago. I was actually working in public radio, and I
should mention at one point you produced here at WVUR for On Point.
That's correct. Thank you. And I was working to collect stories for the one-year anniversary of the Parkland shooting. And two parents in particular, Manny and Patricia Oliver, talked to me about their son Joaquin, who they lost at the Parkland shooting in Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida. And it would not be an exaggeration to say that I thought about that conversation every single day for over a year after I spoke with them. It was deeply moving. I felt like I suddenly missed Joaquin. Yeah.
So, La Flèche, I'm going to come to you in a moment, but just to bring that a little bit further home for our listeners, and this could be hard for some listeners to hear. This is Manny Oliver talking about Joaquin, who was killed in 2018 at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. And this was talking to Democracy Now! In 2019.
The night before the tragedy, Joaquin asked me to stop by and buy some flowers for his girlfriend, because it was going to be Valentine's Day. When I dropped Joaquin in school at 8:30 a.m., he said, "I love you, Dad. I love you, son." And he was holding the sunflowers. And he was supposed to call me back. I mean, we had that kind of relationship. So I told him, "Dude, you make sure you call me back so you can share Tori's reaction with the flowers that we bought last night." He never called back. That was the last time that I had a chance to speak to my son. But I do know that Tori got the sunflowers, so he had time to give them to Tori.
So, La Flèche, that's a deeply personal story, someone's story that Camila is telling along with five others. You went a different route and told a piece of your own story.
That's right. My book, Heartwashed, is a graphic memoir about growing up in the fourth generation of a cult, and about the deeply rooted psychological control cult ministers have on the population. And they use belonging as a way to control people.
And there are a lot of ways you could have told that story, but you tell a father-daughter story that is your father-daughter story.
Yes. When I was nine, my father correctly thought that the ministers had too much power, and he challenged it. And they excommunicated him. And my mother, my siblings, and I were moved from Canada to California to live with my grandparents. And my mother was powerless to do anything about that because she believed she was powerless. It was the fact of life. And I had to change my beliefs about my father and change my love for my father to believe, as I was being told, that he had abandoned me to be with the devil.
I imagine that I don't know if it's processing, maybe is the word I'll use for now. That part of your life is a lifetime's work. But I do wonder how working with visual arts and graphic narrative either contributed to or changed how you thought about it.
I knew that I needed to write this story long before I found or believed that I could write a graphic novel. But then when I discovered comics, I realized that the visual component would help to share how it really feels in a way that I couldn't do with just words.
Well, I will tell you, as someone who's seen some of the art, it does.
Thank you.
So we're here with La Flèche Gieson, Camille Kerwin, Joel Christian Gill. We are with two students who will be among the first group to graduate from this MFA program that you, Joel, founded. And I'm going to come back to you now, just based on the stories we just heard. What I found myself thinking and listening to these two students is, you must have had some image in your head 2 years ago about who your graduates were going to be and what kind of stories they were going to tell. That was then, you know, how it started, how it's going.
Yeah, it's really funny because they have to meet with publishers and editors and agents in part of this process, and then the public book talk. And I was standing outside of one of the rooms and with my grad assistant, Ella Sherrell, and Ella was like, I've been thinking about this for 2 years. I'm like, I've been thinking about this for five. So like, it's really interesting because it's like the plan that you have versus the plan that actually, I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better group. Like, which I say this all the time. I didn't pick them because they were all chosen before I was hired. And I just like, I feel so incredibly lucky that this is the group of people that I got to sort of, I mean, they're like first children, right? Like I made some mistakes and we fixed some stuff. But, you know, like the work that they, I'm like just overwhelmingly proud of what they've been able to do.
So in Camila's work on the five victims of gun violence in America, what was something you saw in that work that you thought was fundamental to what you've been trying to teach all of us about you know, how this medium is powerful?
Well, Camila, I think, I mean, both of them are like, it's all, well, Camila specifically, I'm like, she was like, the first semester, we were like, you sure you didn't go to art school? Like, I'm like watching her draw, and like these stories were just so powerful. And like when you, and if anybody can come between 3 and 5 today to see some of the other students talk, because they're really powerful stories, but to see her talk about this work, it was like, I'm not joking when I say there wasn't a dry eye in the house, because she tells you the story, and it basically gets at that idea that I keep talking about, like comics being empathy machines.
Yeah.
Like you get to feel what it's like to be these people. And Camila's very even-handed about how she talks about this. It's about complicated people and complicated stories. So when you get to her story, like there are people who, me personally, I would view as villains, but Camila doesn't necessarily treat them like that. She talks about them in the ways in which, like, to explain that complicated part of the story, which I think is important.
I want to illustrate that for listeners. So, for example, in the story of Manny Oliver and his son Joaquin, you tell a parallel story, Camila, of somebody who is the head of the NRA, mm-hmm. And her experience with guns, why she chose to be a gun owner, that for her it was empowering. Mm-hmm. And there's this juxtapositioning that you're doing.
That's correct, yeah. You're referring to the story of Marion Hammer, who was the first woman president of the NRA, I believe in the 90s. And it's easy to make a villain of the people who are kind of at the head of these organizations. And you look into their stories and, you know, Marion Hammer grew up poor on her grandparents' farm in South Carolina. She and her family relied on shotguns to shoot small game to put food on the table. She tells a story of in the 80s being followed by a group of men while she was on her way to her car in a parking lot. It was dark. She says she's felt scared. She says that in that moment, it was the revolver she pulled out of her purse that saved her from assault or perhaps worse that day. You know, she's arguably one of the most important lobbyists of the NRA ever, pushing gun rights bill after gun rights bill. And you got to wonder, well, maybe she thought she was protecting women. I don't know.
Back to you, Joel. pick back up.
Yeah. So, and I think when you see, like, just with that story specifically, right? Like the idea that Marion Hammer uses a gun to protect herself in a situation, that's something that nobody would fault her for, right? And that's like a, that's a very human thing to see someone, specifically a woman, actually protecting herself from that. So it's hard to argue with that. But like I said, like, in my personal, like, idea, I would say they were villains.
So I want to pull out now. We picked some pages, right? And La Flèche, I'm going to start with two pages from yours. And this is your thesis, basically. Mm-hmm. But it's got illustrations that would eventually appear, I think, in your work.
That's correct.
And what struck me about these, and Joel, one of the things you've been talking with us about over the years are the ways that pictures capture things that sometimes words are insufficient to do. And in these pictures, La Flèche, there are two times when you as a girl are in a basement. And in one of them, you're having a wonderful experience with your father. And you can see it. The basement takes on this whole energy, right? And then there's another experience you're having in the basement. You're on the stairs both times, basement stairs. And something that makes you feel horrible has happened to you. Somebody has scolded you in a way that's humiliating for you. And I don't need any words or to know any of the story when I look at this basement stairs with your father and this basement stairs after the humiliation to know the moods and the experiences that you're having here. Yeah. And it is very striking to see the power of that, again, especially in you having to tell your own story with a set of stairs, La Flèche. Yeah.
And, you know, what's even more powerful about that is that those are feelings that a child is having before she can understand the feelings. She's coming up the stairs on a happy day, bringing up the logs with her father.
Some firewood with her dad.
Some firewood. Yeah. And we had seen in that chapter that the wood room is full. And then the scary scene where she's upset and running to hide.
Because somebody scolded her from eating Cheerios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, she's hiding. It's how she deals with conflict. We can see that the wood room is empty. And we understand that her father has been gone. And she's now without that piece. And she doesn't have the emotional ability to understand the depth of that. But we do.
And Joel, I can see all of that in a hot second here versus the three pages that it would take me to read it.
Yeah, and I think what the thing that's important to think about, and this is something that if anybody's listening to us before has heard me say, that, you know, comics is this fine line between letting the pictures tell the story and letting the words tell the story and letting them both accent. And when you think about it, like, I think what La Flèche did that's, I think, is amazing about this is that letting the word, like, a picture tells 1,000 words. We've all heard this, right? And in comics, like, what we have to do is try to figure out how to let it do that. How do we let it tell those 1,000 words? And how do we use these art principles and the ways in which we think about things to guide people to a place where they will see what we want them to see? And I think that's the beauty in, like, everybody's stories. They are telling you, they're letting you see what they want you to see. And I think that's why I introduce them as not as my students, but my future colleagues, right? Because they are doing the things that I have been telling them to do, and now I'm going to learn from them.
We're here with Joel Christian Gill and two students who will be receiving the first MFAs from Boston University, who holds the license on WBUR, in the Masters of Fine Arts program in visual narrative. And I'm glad you said what you just said, Joel, because one of the pages, Camila, that I pulled from your thesis, page 30, and it is right after Manny Oliver finds out that his son Joaquin was killed in the 2018 Parkland shooting. And rather than lots happening, what really struck me is it is one image and it is black with some graininess in it. Mm-hmm. And that choice seemed like a really huge choice the moment after he finds out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're referring to the two-page spread of just two black pages, and it almost looks like a black paintbrush kind of took to the page. There's a little bit of organic graininess. And I had
it actually looked like snakeskin to me.
Oh, wow. And I had it very clear when I set out to write The Leading Cause that I was not going to belabor the details of the deaths of these kids. I think enough has been done about that in the news already. I wanted to show how it felt to lose them, not to sort of litter the page with graphic details. I thought that that might cheapen their stories. And so I thought, well, what is the way that I can kind of visually represent how this might have felt in that moment? And it just, you know, that was an early decision I made that felt right away.
One of the things that struck me about this, Joel Christian Gill, as we get close to wrapping now, when we talked about the very famous comic Mouse, one of the things that we talked about is the power of when you choose a single image on a page.
Right.
And how that communicates.
Right.
And there were several times, both there and in La Flèche's work with the emptiness of the basement versus the fullness of the frame, that I was like, oh, he taught me this, he taught them this. Right? Do you see your teaching in this art?
Sometimes. I mean, I don't want to take, it's one of those, well, I guess when, what's funny is like, when I was talking to La Flèche about something, and I think I told her to do something earlier, and she didn't do it, and then she tried it later, and I forget what it was. I can't remember exactly what it was. And
do
I was
you
just
remember?
Like, and I was just like, see it? Oh, I know what it was. It was like not penciling so much.
Oh, yeah.
I kept saying, don't pencil so much, just do it, right? And she resisted and she resisted and she resisted, and then she finally did, and she was like, it's so much better. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Was it so much better?
I do remember it. He's referring to when I was doing this at first, I was very careful about the pencil stage, and I was wasting a lot of time on that, and then the ink stage on top was too stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I took his finally dropped the resistance and took his advice, everything looked so much more natural and organic and inviting. And, you know, I think that this process of being a creator is very much about figuring out what you're resistant to and then giving up on it.
Well, listen, go see what La Flèche has created, what Camila has created, what the other students have created. Their work will be on display at BU's Howard Thurman Center starting at 5 today.
3 to 5.
3 to 5.
3 to 5 today talks.
Today. And Joel Christian Gill, Camila Kerwin, La Flèche Giasson, thank you to all three of you for being here.
Thank you.